All right, and let's see where we're going. So, Good morning. My name is Jim Sutherland, and I'll be your worship associate this morning. And before we begin our service, I invite you to look at our announcements on the screen. We've got Foreign Foods Friday on June 21st at 6:30. Please sign up today. The men's group is meeting on Saturday, June 22nd at 10 in the morning. And the UUA General Assembly is Wednesday, June 19th through the 23rd. And then on Friday, June 21st, this is special for Mr. Heaton back there, UUCF's Katie and James Crippen, Gary Daniels, Chris Heaton will perform as the Fullerton Classiques at the Fullerton Elks Lodge from 6:30 to 8 p.m. Come welcome in summer with a set of classic rock and surf tunes. Actually, really awesome music. They do a fantastic job with that. And there we go. Happy Father's Day.
Wait.
And welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Congregation in Fullerton. I am the Reverend Jason Cook. It is lovely to see your faces this morning. If you are new to our community, I hope you will continue to join us in our continuing search for truth and meaning amidst all the changes we see in our world today. And in that spirit of hospitality, I invite you to find someone around you who you don't know too well and say good morning.
Everybody, and happy Father's Day. My name is Eleanor Nunez, and I'm music director here at UUCF. And for our opening hymn, we will be singing number 1051, We Are. Yes, there we go. So please rise in mind, body, or spirit and join us in singing.
Next
slide. There we go. We are
of nations, we're seekers of truth and keepers of faith. We are makers of peace and the wisdom of ages. We are our grandmother's prayers, and we are our grandfather's dreams.
Empowering Fathers of the World by Lorraine Pator McNeil. Today is Father's Day, a day in which we honor and offer gratitude for our fathers in whatever form or fashion they come into our lives. Biological fathers, stepfathers, adoptive and foster fathers, grandfathers, spiritual fathers, and all of the uncles, brothers, and friends who, whether they know it or not, have helped to fill the role of father in someone's life. We are shaped by their presence and their absence, by how they choose to act and when they abstain, what they say and when they remain silent. Let us remember today and always the impact that these people have on us as individuals and as a community. And let us also remember that this relationship is not one-sided and that we, as a community, are called to support and empower the fathers of the world. No matter how they come into their roles, and regardless of their relative successes or failures, let us rise up to the triumphs and let us have the grace to forgive them their all too human failures. Let us love our fathers and each other. Come, let us worship together. I now invite Harry Langenbacher to come light the chalice. Thank you, Harry. I now invite you to join with me in saying the words on the screen. This flame affirms the light of truth, the warmth of community, and the fire of commitment. Love is the doctrine that we share. The quest for truth is our sacrament, and service is our prayer. So dwell together in peace, to seek knowledge and freedom, to serve human need. Thus do we covenant with one another. Each Sunday, our children collect food donations, and our food this month is rice. This is to provide for those in need. We invite the children to sit up front for the Time of All Ages presentation before going to their educational classes.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Rachel White, and I'm the Director of Religious Education here at UCF. And this morning, I want to give us a little bit of a history lesson and talk about where Father's Day actually came from. Because we have spoken here at UCF about where Mother's Day has come from, and I want to tell us how Father's Day in the United States came to be. And it's a really special story. I really like it because it really stems from one daughter's love for her father. So this woman up here, Sonora Louise Smart Dodd, was the daughter of a widowed father of six. She was the oldest of six children. And at the age of 16, her father was widowed, and he spent his entire life dedicating his life to his children, making sacrifices and working very hard to take care of them. And so she recognized this in her father. And in 1909, after she heard the Mother's Day Declaration, she began to think. She thought about, well, mothers get this really special day, and look at my father. He's really amazing. He's working so hard for me and my siblings. And so then she decided a couple years after that to petition for Father's Day. Inspired by Anna Jarvis, who was the one who promoted Mother's Day, she then began a rigorous campaign to celebrate Father's Day in the United States. She was born in Spokane, Washington, so she went to the Spokane, Washington YMCA, and they got their support for the cause, and really only received a few signatures in Spokane to be able to do a small celebration in 1910 on June 19th in Spokane, Washington for Father's Day. And a fun fact is she actually wanted Father's Day to be celebrated on June 5th earlier in the month because that was when her father's birthday was. Unfortunately, so close to Mother's Day, all the pastors and religious clergy didn't have enough time to write something for Father's Day, so they asked her to postpone it just a couple of weeks. So she still got it close to her father's birthday, but not quite as close as she really wanted. Though it wasn't really a big popular holiday in the United States, it took many, many years. Slowly it gained traction and cities all over the United States started to celebrate Father's Day. But it actually wasn't nationally recognized until 1972. So it's a little under 50 years old in the United States. Many presidents like Woodrow Wilson, Calvin Coolidge, and Lyndon B. Johnson all wrote words in support of it, but it wasn't until, but none of them passed any legislation ratifying it as an actual holiday. So today, Father's Day is celebrated all over in over 30 countries around the world. When children of all these countries celebrate the day, they express gratitude for their fathers or father figures in their life. They also owe a thank you, and all of our fathers do, to Sonora, because it was she who thought of the idea of celebrating Father's Day because she had such a dedicated father. So as we go to our classes, I want us all to think about that love and how much we care for the fathers and grandfathers and father figures in our lives.
First joy or sorrow that we have this morning is from a slip that someone filled out earlier today, and it fits very well with what I was planning to do. It says, for everyone whose father died this past year who might be feeling a little lost today. So we light a candle for those folks. And in just a few minutes, we will have an opportunity to do some remembering of the fathers in our lives, both those who are here with us and those who are deceased. So that will be in just a few minutes. And before that, I invite you, if you do have a brief personal joy or sorrow, something happening in your life that you would like to share with the larger congregation, this is the time.
My name is Lois Nettleship, and I have a great joy to share. Our older daughter, Elizabeth, just received her master's in accounting from San Luis Obispo, and she landed a dream job in Silicon Valley. She just moved to her apartment in Palo Alto, and go, girl, go.
I have two quick joys. One is this is my son's first Father's Day. His son's 2 months old. I'm very excited. And the other is I'm in a play at Long Beach Playhouse for another about 3 weekends. It's called The Hatmaker's Wife. I am the titular role. It's not that big a part, though, but it's a fun show.
Well, I am personally tickled this morning at the turnout for the Sunday Symposium. We had a lucky 13 people show out, which I think was a fantastic start to hear a lot about homelessness issues in Orange County. We'll be doing it every month, and I'm delighted at the start.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Sarah. Many of you know my son, Noah, who just finished up his fourth grade year.
And for those of you who have been raised in California, you know your fourth grade year is when you study what? Noah, by the time that he finished May 30th, the last day of school, saw during his fourth grade school year all 21 California missions. It was a crazy year for us, but we went up and down the state from San Diego to Alcala, up to Solano. He saw all 21, and ask him about them because he can tell you thoroughly about all of them. And so now he's a bit of a missions expert, and I was very happy to be able to go along on that trip with him. So now I'm an expert too.
And let's light a candle for all of the end of the school year victories and yeah, I see some hands waving and just some that relief that another year for both our teachers and the kids in our congregation, another year and our parents has passed. So holidays are complicated, especially ones named after particular roles. Human relationships are messy. We talked a little bit about that last week when we were talking about communication. And especially those relationships with people who are honored on holidays bring up a lot of different things for people. As we heard just a moment ago, grief is one of the things that it brings up. Father's Day might bring up feelings of sorrow or regret for people who wanted to be fathers and haven't been able to, or who haven't been able to be the fathers they wanted to be for their kids. Today might be a day of divided loyalties for people who may have called more than one person father or dad in the course of their lives. Then there are the people of a variety of genders who are father figures, step-parents and mentors for young people, but who don't get the recognition they deserve today or any day. And then on the other hand, Father's Day can be joyful, sweet, remembering the times when dads or granddads or role models were there for us. For people who have a positive relationship with a living father figure, today may very well include happy phone calls, funny greeting cards, tacky ties. For contented new fathers, today might be full of wonder and hope as they get used to their new title. And for a lot of people, I dare say most of us, there will be a mix. Even the best dads fall short sometimes. Some fathers who struggle still have their shining moments. Nothing is simple. So in just a moment, we're going to engage in a little ritual to remember the father figures who are maybe in our lives now or who were in our lives at one time. And I invite you to expand your idea of who those folks might be based on everything I said here, everything you've heard this morning, all the people that have mentored in your lives. It's challenging nowadays when we talk about people in the roles of mother or father, these kind of binary ideas of what it means to parent. But so many of us have been affected by people who have taken those parental roles in our lives in various ways. I invite you to bring any of those folks that fit in your mind into this space this morning. And I invite you to be grateful. Grateful for the nurturing we have received in our lives from sources both hidden and obvious. May we heal from the losses highlighted by Father's Day, and may we nurture each other and the generations to come. May the friendship and love we have in our lives today ease the pain and amplify the positive memories of our past. And may this be a day of reconciliation and peace. So I invite our worship associate to prepare our materials here for this ritual. This is very similar to what we did at Mother's Day. There will be water that has a little bit of the water from our water communion going all the way back in September. And this will be the last time for this church year that we use any of that water. But it's water from the water communion, and the stones that you're invited to drop into the water. You are also invited to say a name into the microphone if you would like. Or you may just come up and silently drop a stone or two stones or three stones into the water. Again, this is what you make of it, how you want to interpret it. It's all about honoring those folks who have played that role of a father in our lives at some point. So there'll be some music, but I will be standing there with the microphone. And again, you're invited to say a name or not as you feel called to. Jonathan Mark Cook.
Gramps.
Gene Brown.
Gary and Ed.
Daddy Alstein.
Still miss you, Fred.
Smith and Edwin Burnett.
George, David, Cliff, and Larry.
Jason Barton, Kenneth F. Vernon, and Kenneth A. Vernon.
Elmar Bunn.
Henry Danzig, Oscar Schwartz.
Paul Edwards and Ken Sutherland.
Bill Can, Fred Vail.
My best friend in growing up.
Albert Anthony Umbriaco.
John R. Nichols.
John Kittowitz.
Charles Shankman.
Jack Reese Chapel.
Jim Casper.
Anna Ludi and Brian Clemens.
Bruce Dool.
John Clemens, George Turner.
Donald McNeil.
Howard Bessemer.
Lee Hers. Mo Wrightboard and Jules Fishman.
Eldo, Timothy, and Andrew.
Joe Duarte.
Juan Sr., Dennis Tung, and Pete Magno.
Coach Ewing, James F. Cruz, and Grandpa Cruz.
We offer gratitude for all these names and the spirits and memories that have been brought into this space this morning. I invite you into a time of prayer, meditation, and reflection. Forgive me, my dear Father, for all the trouble I caused. The missed curfews, the missed classes, your unfulfilled dreams for me, Forgive me, dear Father. Your dreams are not my dreams. Forgive me, dear Father. And I will forgive you for missed moments that you sacrificed so that one day I could follow my dreams. And now forgive me, my son, for whatever errors I have made. Forgive me, my son, for what I did not know. Know that I sacrificed so that one day you could follow your dreams. May all our failings from generation to generation lead one day to wisdom. But until then, we will always have love. Maybe that is wisdom enough. I invite you into a moment of silence, shared together. Life is guided by those who nurture us. Whatever role they play and however we understand them, mothers, fathers, mentors, supporters, teachers, friends. And we too play those roles for others. Others who are always watching and listening. Let us never forget that as we move through the world, we are offering that support for someone else, that they are looking to us to know how to be, how to make sense of this complicated world. Let us know that the ears of not just children, but everyone hears our words, that their eyes see what we do, and most of all, their hearts know us for who we are.
Careful the things you say, children will listen. Careful the things you do, children will see and learn. Children may not obey, but children will listen. Children will look to you. Way to turn, to learn what to be. Careful before you say, listen to me. Children will listen. Careful the wish you make. Wishes are children. Careful the path they take. Wishes come true. Not free. Careful the spell you cast. Not just on children. Sometimes a spell may last past what you can see and turn against you. Careful the tale you tell, that is the spell. Children will listen. Guide them and step away. Children will glisten. Tamper with what is true, and children will turn, if just to be free. Careful before you say, listen to me. Children will listen. Children will listen. Children will listen.
Each of us have gifts and wounds from those who fathered us. This is inevitable. Even the best fathers in the world disappoint their children sometimes. Otherwise, we wouldn't be able to grow up. But I know that some wounds are deeper than others. Some people's hearts have been broken by their father's neglect or abuse, or by the absence of good fathering in their lives. When Father's Day comes along, while it may be a joyful day for some, it can bring up the pain others carry from painful relationships with their fathers. It can also trigger grief and sadness for those who have lost their fathers, or whose fathers' lives have been diminished from illness or old age. Let this be a day when we can honor our fathers and also honor our fathering wounds. Jane Myers Drew, a psychologist whose father died when she was only a toddler, wrestled with the question of how to recover from fathering wounds. She offers some guidance for healing in her book, Where Were You When I Needed You, Dad? She says that first of all, we must increase our awareness of our father's impact on us. We must define what we missed from our dad when we were young and what we received from him. Then we must get in touch with any hurt and anger we may be holding on to regarding our father and make room for expressing our feelings, mourning, and letting go of our pain. And when we have honored our feelings, we are able to look again at our own father, seeing him as a human being in his own right, and cultivating a deeper understanding of his situation. This will help us to say goodbye to the dad of our youth and to release any expectations we have that can no longer be fulfilled. Then we turn to healing the child within, reconnecting with that young part of ourselves who wanted to be nurtured and treasured by a tender father. We try to become our own good father, finding ways to fill in for the experiences that we missed out on. Fathering ourselves will be different for each of us. Each of us had unique childhood experiences, different gifts and wounds that we received. For some, it may not be simple or easy to undo the damage of childhood. But even if we didn't receive all the fathering we needed from our biological fathers or other childhood caregivers, we can receive fathering from others even as adults. All of us, as adults, can learn to parent ourselves and each other, to share the gifts we receive from our fathers and to heal from the wounds of our childhoods. We can adopt father figures to help us learn what we didn't learn from our own parents. Father figures are those who believe in us, who treat us like we're special, It might be as simple as a neighbor who teaches us how to wash and wax the car. It might be an art teacher who encourages us to draw or paint, or a friend who listens to our struggles and confusion. Part of growing up is realizing that our fathers are human beings with gifts and failings. Part of growing up, which is a lifelong process, is letting go of needing our fathers to be better than they were. This is easier to do if we realize that we can offer and receive fathering from others. And when we can do this, we're also able to better honor the gifts and forgive the wounds we have received from our fathers. So now we are going to hear from three fathers right here in our own UUCF congregation, three fathers with children in our RE program, as they talk about their understanding, their dreams, their hopes as UU fathers in today's world.
Okay, September 28th, 2006, around 3 o'clock in the morning, in the maternity ward in a small Mesa, Arizona hospital. When Jillian's head appeared, it was immediately clear that she couldn't breathe, that her lungs were filled with meconium, the sticky substance excreted in utero, and that it was going to take a huge effort to purge it out of her system. About 30 minutes after her birth, hospital staff led me over to where Jillian lay in a small plastic box, tubes bringing her precious oxygen. They left me with her, tiny and struggling. I put my hand down near hers, and she reached out, as babies do, and grasped my finger. This is it, I thought. This is my turn to matter to someone. I am the child of two generations of divorce on my father's side. My dad, in one of his rare emotional moments, once said to me, "Drew, I feel like chapelmen get a little better in each generation." My grandfather was a war hero. He was a spy during World War II. Not a James Bond-esque gentleman spy, but a gritty OSS attack dog who parachuted behind enemy lines and negotiated the surrender of an entire panzer tank battalion. My dad was a journalist and then a university administrator. Caught between his own father's example and a changing social landscape of masculinity. In the end, both of these men left their marriages better, my dad told me. But what does that mean? Especially since I now represent a third generation of divorce, something I worked hard to avoid so my own child would not be left with the divided life that my father and his siblings, that I and my sister had. How in the world can I be better when I have ensured that Jillian will go through the same things that I went through, and this time without even a sibling to support her? But my questions are both spiritual and practical. What does it mean to be a UU father? What does it mean to prepare my child for what lies ahead, much of which I cannot know? What does it mean to do this not as part of a communicative team, but as a single parent with half of Jillian's life now closed off to me? I'm reminded of a quote from one of my favorite poets, Adrian Rich. Adrian Rich said, "Whatever we do together is pure invention. The maps they gave us are out of date by years." So I go back to that first night when Jillian reached out and held my finger in her tiny hand. I think there's a reason that babies have this instinct. It's as if they're saying, "I'm here. I trust you. Show me what to do." Kind of like when we take each other's hands at the end of every service. We're here. We trust each other. Our maps may be out of date, but with the help of our principles and our relationships, we invent. We find our way. And hopefully we all get a little better in each generation. So hold on tight, Jillian. You and I have an awfully long way to go, but we'll get there together. Thank you.
A I can't tell you how many times I've written this over and over. I'm kind of a perfectionist when it comes to writing, so I decided to just wing it, much to the dismay of many. I was raised Presbyterian, and now that I say this out loud, I realize it sounds like some sort of gender identity. I think now if I still identified with it, I would want to call it a WASP, right? White Anglo-Saxon Protestant. But anyway, my parents felt very strongly that being raised in the community, in a religious community, was something that we should be a part of and reinforce ethics, values, morals, beliefs. And we joined a Presbyterian church in Euclid, Ohio. Of course, my family, we can't just go to church and not jump in and kind of take control of things. Both of my parents became deacons. My mom actually ran the women's club. So we were very active with the church. I actually was the youngest ordained deacon, I guess, in the 100-year history of the church at the time. So I go off to college and started exploring other religious, other beliefs and trying to kind of subdue what I had been raised to believe in order to try to understand what else is out there in the world. I had friends that were Jewish, Catholic, Greek Orthodox, Lutheran, Baptist, and talked to them quite extensively over what they believed and what they got out of church, and we all kind of seemed to be a little bit lost at the time. So I got my degree in psychology and almost a minor in philosophy, and in my philosophy class, I kind of realized that to believe a certain faith, you almost have to believe it as blind faith. That being said, I really kind of didn't know what I believed at that point. I met my wife, Catherine, and I've never met anyone that I've shared so many common ideas, beliefs, values, and everything. My morals, ethics, values, how we raise our children, and what we want to do as have an impact on our lives with our children and in our community. Claudette and Crystal Massey introduced us to UUs, and for that, extremely thankful and totally miss both of them very much. Becoming a UU offered me the ability to still explore what I believe, and I'm still searching. It's still a journey for me. But looking back, I realized that my children are going to have a choice of what they believe and what their faith, value systems, and everything moral and ethics are going to be. We're just giving them that platform, and thanks to all of you being part of that platform, they're going to be able to explore and become the people who they want to be, not who I force them to be. So that's what's important to me with raising my children and my family, and I'm proud to be a UU. I'm proud to be a member of this community, and I'm proud that all of you will help me guide my children. So thank you very much.
Hello, everyone. My name is Ramon Gallegos. My girls are Olivia and Josephine. They're here quite often, and I'm sure you see them running around. And, you know, when Reverend asked me to, speak to answer the question that he posed to me, I thought it was strange that I've been a father for almost 9 years, and I hadn't really considered the question that the Reverend had posed, which is, as a UU dad, what do you want, or what do I want for my children in today's world and for the future? And it's kind of embarrassing to think that I haven't given their future a lot of thought. And I think some of it has to do with the sad state of affairs that we find ourselves in, the world is in right now. You know, it's tough to think about the future when so much is wrong. And I don't see that changing anytime soon. But to answer the question, the world I want for my children today and in the future is, simply put, a world with less bigotry, selfishness, and a lot more empathy and compassion. I have on many occasions considered the question, how could I bring a person into this world with all of its problems? This question leads to guilty feelings, you know, for being selfish, for wanting to be a father. What right do I have to start a life when so much is wrong? Well, wrong has always persisted, and yet we keep having kids. And I think we keep having kids, or at least I had my girls, even with these thoughts, because there are glimmers of hope for the future. My girls sit on my lap, and we'll watch Mulan or Moana or Frozen or any number of movies with strong female roles. And I think of the opportunities my girls have. Or sometimes my girls will say or do something very insightful, and I think that they really can make a difference. I think of this congregation and of the influence you all have on my daughters, and I feel comfort. Yes, the world's in a bad state, but I have children, and I am a good father with guidance and love to provide, and I am not the only one. All of the fathers here are all doing the same thing, and I don't feel so lonely when I think of it in those terms. I don't feel so defeated when I think of the community I have introduced my girls to. Human nature being what it is, the future I want for my kids isn't likely to happen. But I can equip them with the tools necessary to navigate the future with the principles that will make the world a better place. And who knows, perhaps along with your daughters and sons, they will be able to usher in a world of less bigotry and more empathy. Thank you.
Our offering is a vital way we show our gratitude for this community. By giving to UUCF, we know that this community of caring will continue to do its good work in the world. We thank you for your generosity. And once a month, UUCF shares half of the offertory collection and share the plate that is not designated as pledges to a local charity selected by the Social Action Committee. This Sunday, the recipient is Planned Parenthood.
Closing hymn, I believe we are singing The Fire of Commitment. Yes, we are. 1028. You would think I would remember, but every Sunday just kind of bleeds into my brain. 1026. So please rise in mind, body, or spirit and join us in singing.